This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 754. Let's just jump immediately to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. Real things from you, the Nerdist community, and your goings-on. That's super catchy. This is from the Nerdist School. What happens when you put several dozen actors, improvisers in their late teens and early 20s in a room together? Come find out. If you're in college, not enrolled or graduated, you're invited to attend Nerdist School's first annual College Comedy Nerd Fest, November 13th to the 15th. Anyone 18 to 24 is invited to get some great improv and sketch training, see great shows, and network at Nerdist School. It's $35 while early bird registration is still open until November 5th. It's 3 days when this posts. If it's after November 5th and you're hearing this, I don't know, listen to stuff sooner. Tommy Avalone writes, I wanted to post about a film I'm producing called Ghost Heads. We are celebrating the cultural impact of the movie Ghostbusters and what it's had on the public for the last 31 years. We follow people who dress like Ghostbusters, build their own proton packs, restore their Cadillacs to look like the Ecto-1. My last documentary, I Am Santa Claus, that was produced by Mick Foley and Morgan Spurlock, followed around people who dress like Santa Claus and love Christmas. With Ghost Heads, I will do the same with Ghostbusters groups and their love for the movie. They've just launched an Indiegogo, which can be found at ghostheadsmovie.com. That makes sense? Fantastic, everyone. Also, I will be doing the stand-up comedies in Salt Lake City coming up, and Phoenix, and where else am I going to be? Kansas City. Then next year, Nashville, Bloomington, I believe Atlantic City, Baltimore, and then San Francisco for the Fun Comfortable stand-up special taping at the Palace of Fine Arts. FunComfortableTour.com is the URL for that. This episode is Emily Kinney, who's rad. She played Beth on a show called Walking Dead, but she's also a songstress. She is a fantastic musician, singer-songwriter. As you may know if you watched Walking Dead, Beth liked to sing. Well, Emily actually sings and writes songs. So she actually played a few songs in this podcast, and we recorded it at SIR Studios. And it's kind of funny, there was a thumping sound through the wall and in the beginning. And I was like, who the hell is that? And they're like, oh, that's Dave Kahan. He's rehearsing with Soul Savers at the moment. I wanted to knock and then say hi to him. But I didn't, because I like to be respectful. So Emily Kinney, by the way, is promoting her new album. It's called This Is War. It is out now, and she constantly does dates on the road. So look for her online. Go see Emily Kinney when you get a chance. She's wonderful. And now here's the Nerdist Podcast number 754 with Emily Kinney.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Baby, I still Daniel got bruises, but they don't seem to hurt. And I don't want to waste another day. Have you got room for my suitcase? Oh, baby, call me over. Beg me to stay and I'll never leave LA. Or maybe it's the sunshine. Pink sunset, and tattooed on my body is our winning bet. And as the city sky darkens, I'm headed to your house. If there is such thing as true love, we got it all figured out. Waste another day. Have you got room for my suitcase? Oh, baby, call me over. Beg me to stay and I'll never leave LA. Leave LA. Never leave LA.
Okay.
Yeah, this is where we record bands because it just the setup here is better.
Yeah, totally.
Most of the shows we record at my show at midnight, there's a little room there that we record.
I see. Not
as fancy as this at all.
Oh, okay, cool.
It just looks like a creepy office where for the last almost 100 years just weird auditions have happened in. So this is a much friendlier. As we found out that while you were playing here, Depeche Mode is rehearsing in another studio. Last time we were here, Kiss was in this room. So this is a pretty crazy. There's a pretty crazy collection of people that play here.
Yeah, it's cool. I like it.
So where are you? Are you currently on tour now?
We just finished a few shows, like release shows, basically. So we did, you know, L.A., Philly, D.C., and New York City, and that was all last week. So right now, no shows, but we'll be doing a bunch in November.
And do you just kind of go city to city, or do you do the tour bus thing?
The last tour that we did was 33 cities, 7 weeks, and we did a van and a trailer.
Oh, that's nice.
So we did like sleep. We slept at hotels and stuff at night. Like we weren't like sleeping on the bus, and it was cool. It was like small quarters. You know, a bus would be nice, but it was fine. It was really fun.
I think it's good. I don't know. It just sort of adds to the mystique of the whole thing, I think. You know? I think it's good to not be too cushy all the time.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think we were fine. Yeah, it was fun. We all, like, were cozy on the van together, and I got to know what everyone's snack of choice was, you know? Like, when you go to 7-Eleven, like, I got to know, like, everybody knew each other's snack and coffee choices, and it worked out. It was really, really fun.
I mean, I say this, and of course, you came off a show where you were covered in blood every day, and
yeah, it really
picking ticks off
like
your body at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally. I was like very clean on this tour compared to like my job on Walking Dead. You know, I was very like showered and not covered in dirt, and so it was fun.
People still adore you, and I still aww. Get the R.I.P. Beth. You know, whenever we
do
our show, people, you know.
I know. I went to the Walking Dead premiere on Friday.
At Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, and I saw Robert Kirkman and Scott Gimple, and they were like, you have to tell your fans we're, because I'm totally friends with them, especially Scott Gimple. Like,
sure.
He sends me pictures of his baby and stuff like that. And they're like, they're still mad at me. They still send me, like, meme tweets. Like, So people, stop sending them mean tweets. They're very good people.
It really sucks. And unfortunately, killing our favorite characters is one of the things that drives the show, because that's how the other characters are affected, and one by one. And I never predicted when I took this job how attached I would be and how bad I feel when I know, especially, you know, like, oh no, as soon as I saw, because you're obviously a huge spoiler, but if you're not caught up on Walking Dead, that's your fucking fault.
They're starting season six, catch up.
your death was so sudden at the end of that episode, and so like, whoa, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, then I feel like I need to come on and counsel everyone and make them feel okay.
Yeah.
But you coming on the couch and being there, and I'm sure it wasn't easy, but letting people know that you, Emily, are okay. And, you know, like, that's so important for the fans.
Yeah, definitely. I think even now, you know, if I see people and they come up to me and say, like, oh, I watched you on the show, I was so sad when you died. They seem happy to see me, though, like, up, like, a lot. Like, like it's almost this form of sort of therapy or something, being like, oh, see, it's just pretend. You know, here I am in real life. Everything's fine.
Because people get super locked in every Sunday night. They're just,
Yeah, definitely.
They're into it. And I, you know, it is the benefit of having one of the most passionate fan bases, is that it's great, you know, when everyone's on your side. But then, like you said, like Robert or Scott, or if I say something that people don't like, then it's just, they get really angry, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely appreciate that everyone, like, really connected to that character and missed it and misses it. And, like, that's, you know, that makes me feel like, oh, we did a good job making that character, if everyone feels so much for her and misses her. And so it's all good.
Yeah, they did. And just so you know, I didn't see anyone who was like, good. You know, like, everyone was like, no. And for weeks, people would say, get them to bring her back. Make it be a, you know, like, make it be a dream or something, or make it be an alternate reality.
Yeah.
I mean, was your experience on the show, was it anything that you could have possibly imagined? It just seems so beyond anything.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect any of it. You know, I mean, I definitely was, like, working steadily as an actor in New York. And, like, when I first started working on this show, I was hired as a recurring role. So I thought, oh, I'll do, you know, a few episodes. It'll be really awesome. I really wanted to work with Frank Darabont. And, like, at that point, only the first season, which was 6 episodes, had come out. And so I knew it was, like, had this great fan base, and I was really excited, but I had no idea that it would become, you know, 4 years of my life. Now it's still a big part of my life. I mean, I still go to conventions. They became some of my really great friends, you know, on this show. I had all these, like, amazing experiences, and I didn't have any idea when I started that it would become this huge part of my life.
What do you think? What do you think Beth's journey was? Like, where do you think she started and where do you think she ended up by the end?
Oh, man.
Big ticket question.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do feel like she was all along, like, very much of, like, a caretaker and a very, like, strong person. So I feel like that was a thread that was throughout, even from the very beginning, season two. But I do feel like she grew up a lot. Like, I do think, you know, she had to grow up really fast in the circumstances she was in. And I feel like you see her in the first seasons really listening and seeing how she fits into the group and how she can help. And then by the end, I think once she's with Daryl and she starts to really take control. Mm-hmm. And I think that she really grows up and becomes stronger and realizes, you know, what more of what she stands for. And, I think she grew up and really became went from being a teenager to being like a woman and like, you know, taking on all the roles that she needed to take on. Like, you see her in the last season not with the group and just having to stand on her own.
Did the experience for you, how did it affect your songwriting? Like, because obviously it's you're going on an emotional journey.
Yeah.
And you're going to be writing based on whatever kind of stuff you're trying to get expressed. So how
Definitely.
Did it affect your songwriting?
It totally did. And not just the show, like the storyline of Beth, you know, the arc of Beth, but more the storyline of, like, my life of now I'm living in Georgia for a big part of the year and the people that I met. I mean, I met people that I dated and that became part of the stories that I was writing in my songs, and the surroundings that I was in become part of my lyrics. There is one song on my new album called Last Chance, and that one I remember coming up with sitting down after being I had like one free day after filming. I'd gone back to New York just for the day, and I wrote this song, and it was about the end of the world. And I was sort of wondering to myself, why am I coming up with all these lyrics about like the end of the world and like this is our last chance? And it is like a love song, but there's like things about how you're wandering through the streets and people have blank faces. And I was definitely referencing like zombies and,
sure,
you know, so that is it definitely seeped into my songwriting for sure.
What do you, when someone says, what do you do? What do you say? Because you do a lot of different things. So do you say you're an actor or a songwriter, or do you just generalize and go, I'm a performer?
No, I usually say I'm an actor and a songwriter, because I feel like that's what I, even almost more than a singer, I feel like I'm a writer, like a songwriter. Like I write poems a lot. And it, so, but of course, acting, I mean, I love it. So I feel like I'm both of those things is what I say.
Because you've been working, I mean, I saw you on The Flash,
yeah,
which I love The Flash.
Yeah, I do
love
too.
The Flash. It's such,
yeah,
a fun show.
Totally.
But then you were also on The Nick.
Yes.
And what other?
Masters of Sex.
I just finished
an arc on Masters of Sex. And then The Nick will come out next weekend, because I'm not in it until season two.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What do you think the challenge is for you as, you know, because people identify you, like they've identified you so much as Beth because that show is just so enormous. And so has it been a little bit of a, no, I get it. I did that character, but now, you know, I can do this other stuff too.
Yeah. Well, mostly it's been good, I feel like. And I do feel like a lot of Beth fans, if they happen to like tune in, if they do take the time to actually listen to the music, I do feel like it's, you know, they do relate to it in a certain way. Like a lot of times it's, you know, Beth has a lot of like female teenage girlfriends because that's who Beth was. And so,
sure.
And then my music, I feel like also sort of appeals to that same group. So in a lot of ways it's been amazing because, there's that audience. And if you're making something, if you're making songs, well, you need an audience. You need someone to listen to them, you know? So mostly I would say it's been great. And, but there is definitely always that like backlash of like, you know, like, oh, you're trying to do music, like you're,
right.
Like, wait, what are you now? Because people want to know, they want to be able to be like, oh, Emily Kinnean, she's this, she plays Beth. And there's like a whole range of things that we all do every day. You know, it's not just one job, but we all have lots of little aspects to our personality. And so I think it does get a bit confusing sometimes for people, but I kind of just have to do what I want to do.
Yeah, and ultimately, eventually, they'll catch up. Even if it takes a minute, they'll go, "Oh, okay," and then they'll start to expand how they see you. But that, a lot of that's on you to just continue doing what you want to do.
Yeah, and I do feel like, you know, Masters of Sex was a very different kind of role, and I think that helped people be like, "Oh, that's like very different than Walking Dead." And I like playing all kinds of stuff. I mean, I loved playing Beth. That was really, really fun. But I feel like there's a lot of other things I want to do, you know, too. So,
was there any aspect, like, of all the characters that you played, is there one in particular that you feel more represents who you are? Or do you find that they're just all shades of you?
I feel like they're all different, you know. I always bring in myself, of course, to whatever character. But I feel like they're all just little different parts of me. But I mean, Beth, I played for so long that I feel like she just like became a part of, part of me, especially, you know, season two, there wasn't much. So a lot of it was my imagination you know, there wasn't a lot of scenes with Beth or a lot written. So a lot of it was things that we were, me and maybe like the costume designer, or like when we talked as a group, like who is Beth, like that we were coming up with on our own in a certain way. So, I do feel like there's a lot of things like Beth that are, like me. I mean, we both love music. We both love to sing. So, you know.
And then were the producers aware of this? Or did you say, like, hey, you know, if you wanted to throw in some songs, Beth would be totally happy to do those.
I didn't say anything, but when I started on the show, I had just finished my first EP, which was Blue Toothbrush. And in between seasons two and seasons three, I had played a bunch of shows like in New York and LA, and so they knew that that was like a part of like something that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a couple of writers had come to my shows just because we all, you know, became friends and stuff. And so I think they knew that if they wanted to add that in, that that was something that they could do. And so it became something for season three. Like, it originally wasn't a part of Beth's character.
Yeah, she, I'm thinking back now, now that we're six seasons almost, but the, but her, but I feel like her character was really, I feel like kind of the first one. A lot of the characters go through this journey where they kind of die a bit.
Yeah.
Or they decide to just give up, or they choose death, you know, and mm-hmm. then if they can emerge from that, then they're stronger. And if not, then they weren't really equipped to survive in the world. And Beth goes through that. I think was one of the, maybe the first character to be like, I just choose death. I don't want this anymore. I don't care anymore. And then had to emerge and, you know, become stronger.
Yeah, definitely. I think, she sort of went through that really quickly. Like, she was like, I'm done with this. I'm not doing it. But
it kind of put that idea of like, you have to choose, you know, especially in that world, you have to,
you have
choose
to choose
to
that, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go for it.
Cause it is hard sometimes when I'm watching the show and I'm like, they all have this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think anyone would decide to go on at that point?
Yeah. You've lost so many people around you. It seems like death is just around the corner. Like, why even try? Just give in and just make it stop. I guess that's like the...
Maybe being a zombie's rad. Like, you don't know, because, you know, it could be amazing.
Just go with the zombies.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my parents moved around quite a bit, but it was always like little tiny small farm towns. But mostly North Bend, Nebraska, and Wayne, Nebraska is where I went to high school. And then I moved to New York when I was 19, 20 in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. You know, like I grew up in the South. I have a lot of friends in the Midwest, and it's always interesting because it can be a very safe existence. Just stay in the community that you're in, you know, have kids or whatever, like stay there or thrive in that. But, you know, that itch to get out, not everyone does it. So it's a pretty, you know, it can be a risky proposition.
Yeah, it was definitely scary. I would have to say, I think the first year in New York, I mean, now I love New York City and it feels like that's my home.
Yeah.
But my first year in New York City, I remember just being like, this sucks. What? Like, everything is harder. Like, I lived all these different places. Once I lived for a summer with two other girls in a studio, and we had like a bed and a futon. We would like, I don't know why I'm telling you this.
This is
like,
great.
But we would like rotate who got to like have the bed to themselves. But it was fine because it was almost like being in a dorm, you know?
Yeah.
And we were all really busy and I was working on a play. And so I was like really happy to be like, it was just for a summer too. But
that studio was probably like $3,000.
It was right in Midtown. I think I wanted to live there. I remember my friend Kelly asking if I wanted to and just like help with rent. And I was like, well, at least I'll be in a safe neighborhood. Because at that point, too, I was still just like really kind of scared about things in New York. Like everything felt kind of scary. And I thought, well, I'll be with a friend and it's like in a safe neighborhood. It was like Midtown East.
You're kind of like,
felt safe to
you're
me.
Almost surviving the New York apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. I felt so. And we had like these shelves and we put all of our clothes and like in this long hallway before you got into the studio, we put all of our clothes on these shelves. I'll never forget it because we built them so that we would have our full, you know, wardrobe.
Boy, I feel like you could only do that with girls if it were dudes. I don't like three dudes sharing a bed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, come on. That sounds so gross.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of like how messy.
Yeah.
And it's like, did anyone wash these?
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, like they don't.
Also, like you just never have time to yourself. But I remember too this. I feel like I lived there and then I also lived at the Barnes & Noble that was down the street.
Oh, of course.
You know what I mean? Because it was like you would just get up and I just be like, oh, I just want to like sit by myself. So like go get coffee, read a book.
Like,
I read
library.
So many books.
when you really started working, was Walking Dead kind of the first big thing?
No, actually, I mean, big, I guess, is
sure,
compared
sure, sure.
to, but no, I mean, I after that was like that summer with those girls was like my first like equity, you know, play or whatever. And then I started going to a lot of open calls and I worked on several theater things. I worked off Broadway. I worked on a Broadway show, Spring Awakening.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I know
August,
that show.
August Osage County. I loved that play. That was like, I loved that part.
How come?
I just read it. I remember reading it when it was still in Chicago before it had been brought to Broadway. And I was like, oh, it reminds me of things that people have said in my family. Like, it's about a big dysfunctional family. And I played this kind of pothead teenager. And I just really related to her. I don't know. Like just she's sort of analyzing all the things and the problems of her parents. And doesn't talk to anyone until she talks to the housekeeper. She was just like building up all these things that she would say and then go on these long rants to the housekeeper.
I feel like theater especially, you really do form a fast community because you can work on a TV show and never really see anyone else, or you're not really interacting with everyone else, or you know, you're just one at a time and you go wait in your trailer, but you really do form like a little survival group when you're working on a play.
Definitely. Yeah, so when I first moved to the city, that's what I did, a lot of theater. And then I did a lot of TV too, like just guest stars, you know, Law & Order and stuff like that.
You did Law & Order?
Yes.
What did you play on Law & Order?
I did two Law & Orders.
Oh.
Once I played, Mo Rocca, do you know him?
Of course.
Yeah, he played my brother, and he dies in the episode, and then they spend the rest of the episode trying to figure out who murdered him, and I play his sister, and he's been, like, taking care of me because our parents died or whatever. So that was my very first one. And then I played one, I did Law & Order SVU, and I played a prostitute, a high-end prostitute, though. And I get kidnapped by this guy who's, like, doing awful. I mean, it was awful. It was really sad and awful. But he's, like, capturing girls and chasing them down and drugging them and torturing them. And so I get tortured. And
really,
but they saved me at the end.
Oh, good.
They saved me. I didn't die. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, because I feel like that is kind of a rite of passage if you're a New York actor, having been through the Law & Order. Like, once you, I finally got my Law & Order.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. So I remember getting that Law & Order one with Mo Rocca, and I was like, yes! You know, it was like the best thing. Like, I feel like I remember everything about that experience because I was so excited about it.
Did you get interrogated?
A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Who were the cops on the show at that time?
God. It was Mr. Big. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Chris Noth.
Yeah. 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 I did have a lot of scenes with him and Juliana. I don't remember. Who was the other? I don't remember.
It wasn't. I don't remember who the other.
Who was his?
It wasn't. It wasn't Jerry Orbach, was it?
No.
Kyle.
I don't think so. For SVU, for the other one.
No, for the other one. Chris Noth. Oh, Chris was Chris Noth SVU?
No.
No, that was Vincent D'Onofrio.
Criminal Intent.
Criminal Intent. Oh my God, there's so many of them. So much Law & Order in our lives.
Anyway, yeah, I got interrogated a lot.
That's pretty rad. That was a show that I always wanted to do. I did a CSI, but I never did a Law & Order. I'm curious, when you first kind of started, where did you go from the studio apartment?
Oh gosh, actually after that studio apartment, I actually went back to Nebraska for a short time because I was totally broke.
Sure.
And I worked at a coffee shop and I saved up. I saved up $1,000, which now seems like kind of silly, but I was like, now I've got $1,000. I'll move back to New York City.
That's amazing.
So then I moved back, and then I found an apartment in Brooklyn, and a few blocks away was a coffee shop called Gimme Coffee. So I found my apartment, and I actually moved in with that same girl, Kelly. We decided I had kept in touch with her, and we got, you know, a two bedroom though. So I had like my own bedroom, and, I just walked around the neighborhood and Gimme Coffee hired me to work there. So, yeah. So then I was living in Brooklyn and I lived at that spot for a while, few years.
That's pretty ballsy to just be like, okay, now I have a moment. I'm going to go back. Like, just going to New York with $1,000 where you have no idea.
And actually, yeah. And I found my job though at the coffee shop like within the first few days of moving back to New York. And that apartment, I only had to have... didn't require any, it was like kind of a sketchy deal, but it worked for me. Like, I was like, I'll do it. But I remember the landlord was like, oh, he just wanted to meet people. Like, we didn't have to have a deposit. We didn't have to do any of that. We just had to pay first month's rent. And it was $1,600. So I had so that was exactly the right amount of money because I had $800, you know, I had $1,000.
Yeah.
So
you had $200 left to eat food.
Yes. But then I immediately started working at the coffee shop. So I like started making money and, you know,
that's good.
Yeah, it was all good. And it wasn't too long before I got like another theater. You know, I was always I never went too long without like some kind of gig, you know.
Do you, which is a good lesson in just like, you know, just do it. If you had waited in Nebraska, you might still
be
hoping that you were in New York and, oh, I'm saving money, I guess.
Yeah, people always, I mean, everybody has a different sort of plan and path and things that are important to them. But I will say, I think I, sometimes people will be like, well, I need to have this and this and this and this and this set before I do this other thing, you know, like before I'm going to go to New York and be an actor, or before I'm going to go like write a song or something, like I have to do all these other like life maintenance things. And I'm sort of, I get too uncomfortable. If I have an idea, I have to kind of just like follow it through.
That's good. Cause you, if you overthink it before you do it, then a lot of times you just might not do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll never. Oh, I need this. Or
yeah,
I need
and
this.
That was like terrifying idea to me. Like, I really didn't want to stay in Nebraska. Now I look back and I'm like, oh, Nebraska was a fine place to grow up and really nice, and there's really amazing things about it. But at the time, I was just, I wanted to get out of there. Like, I was plotting, you know.
Do you ever think you'll move back someday? Do you think you'll just buy a house in Nebraska just to go back?
No. I don't. Sometimes when I was on tour, actually, we would go past little towns or little nice communities and stuff, and I would think to my, I would fantasize about, it would be nice to like take a year and like live. But I feel like I get to do that. Like with Walking Dead, I got to live in like a little town in Georgia.
Yeah.
Being an actor, you get to experience different environments. But I do sometimes have this fantasy of like living in a small town for just like a year, just more as like a break.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and just to like live life and not be, you know, just a break. I'm sure you feel, do you ever feel that way or not?
Yeah, no, I do.
I mean, I love my job, but there's something about having some clear headspace. I think for writing too.
Oh, well, yeah. You know? Well, you need it, you know, because you need to clear your head to be inspired. There, sometimes you might get lucky and you're, oh, I'm inspired right now. But a lot of times if your head is filled with all the shit that you have to do, it can be a little intense. But
yeah.
I'll travel across the country and driving to, you know, wherever I'm performing, if I see, oh, this will be so great to live in this area. This is so peaceful. But I feel like if I did it for 2 weeks, I'd start to get freaked out. Like,
yeah.
I need to do something now. I can't just sit here. I can't just sit here. I have to do something.
Yeah, I feel like it would be fun for a bit, like to pretend to live there for a bit. And then like, you know.
But it's hard. It's also, you know, we're so conditioned in this business. It's like, well, you got to take the opportunities because they're not.
Yeah.
Which maybe is true or not true. I don't know. But I do feel, you know, for me, I sort of feel like, well, there's windows and my career's had ups and downs and now things are good. So I'm going to pursue these while I can.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, I mean, do you feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm having a lot of fun. Like I don't feel any need to. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, it'd be nice to take like a small, like a week off or
sure.
something like that. Like I could definitely use that. But I'm having a lot of fun. Like I feel like the things that I wanted to do when I was in Nebraska, I'm like, God, I got to get out of here. I got to like make music and do plays and act in cool TV shows. Like I'm getting to do that. So
you're literally doing all of those things.
So like, I feel like it's all pretty fun right now. Like I want to keep doing more of it. So anything I can do to like make sure that I can keep doing it is really, you know, is good for me.
If you had a good acting gig or a good music gig on the same night and you had to pick one, what would you choose?
It would really depend on what they were.
What if
that's
it was like
so hard to pick.
Carnegie Hall
or
like, I don't know, whatever your favorite TV show is or like to work with a director.
I know. You know what? I have to say, if it really truly was a huge opportunity for music, I'd probably choose music only because there's something about it being your own.
Right.
You know, it's like I'm like it's so wonderful to be picked to be in a TV show or because like you audition or someone reaches out to you or to be picked to be in someone else's basically though bigger vision, mm-hmm. you know? And like with music, it's like it starts with my brain and my vision and, you know, so there's something about if someone was like, oh, here's a huge opportunity for this thing that came from your head
right.
and created, that's pretty special.
Yeah, and then you'd also have to pretend to be someone else and you get to be yourself when you're on
yeah,
stage.
Yeah, there's something about being yourself.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think I would probably choose the same thing.
Yeah.
When you first started realizing, like, oh, I'm working, I'm actually making a little bit of money. Do you have a memory of what your first – was there one luxury item that you're like, oh, my God, I can afford to buy this thing now?
Oh.
Or was it just, oh, I don't have to worry about where money's going to come from next week?
Oh, man. You know what I do remember when I was like, no more roommates. Like, I remember when I got my first apartment that was just all mine in New York City. And it was something that I had been like, you know, doing all the like journaling and secret shit and all of that, you know, like this, like,
yeah.
Like someday I want an apartment that is completely my own. And I'm just gonna like sit in the middle of it and be like, you know, in New York City. Like I, this whole idea of like having an apartment of my own in New York City has been in my mind since probably I moved there, because I was like, oh, I just want my own place. But and I remember moving into the apartment, and I still have it. I mean, I just moved to LA, but I'm keeping that apartment.
Oh yeah, we gotta
I can't leave. I can't let it go. But I remember moving my stuff in, and I barely had any furniture because I had always lived with roommates. And I just remember sitting there and being really like in the middle of the forest, being like, yes, I felt so happy.
I mean, LA is an expensive place to live, but New York is...
it's pretty intense.
Hilariously oppressive. Even Brooklyn, like, it's not
It's
even...
like you can be making so much money and be like, walking up tons of, like stairs in your place, like, none, like, is, I don't know, the buildings are kind of old and, which is cool and charming, but yeah, you can definitely make a lot of money and still be living in a way that some people might consider kind of, like, not... not the best.
Do you like LA?
I like LA, yeah. I needed a bit of a change, I think. I like LA. Yeah, I definitely feel like I want to die in New York City. Like, if I can choose.
Right.
Like I want to, like, be doing plays. If I'm lucky enough to live that long and stay healthy, I want to, like, be doing plays when I'm, like, 80 and, like, running around on stage. But I like living in LA for right now. My little sister lives here. She goes to law school. She's very different than me.
Oh, wow.
She's pretty smart and tough. But she's at law school at UCLA, and it's been kind of cool having her in LA. And I was realizing it's nice to, like, live close to family. So I'm digging it right now. And the weather and... everything's just a little bit easier,
I'm telling you,
to be honest.
People shit on LA all the time, but if you spend some time here, the weather really does help a lot. The weather is really... seasons are nice. It's fun. I like visiting seasons.
Yeah.
But I also love kind of knowing, like, the weather's probably going to be okay today, and the sky's blue. Like,
and you're
that's
not going
nice.
To get totally rained on, and the you know, there's something about New York that's just a little bit more stressful. Like, I feel like I sleep more here, too.
I'm telling you, it really... if you can survive the elements and the culture and if you can survive all of the external stuff, because I think the soul of New York is amazing. And there is as gruff as some people can be, there's a spirit of community there that we don't have in LA, because LA is not a real city.
Mm-hmm.
LA is a collection of small little communities connected by traffic. But New York is really you feel the community of New York, and it's so special. If you can survive the living situation and the transportation and trying to get, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But even, you know, even like dating in New York, I feel like is easier. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's just like, oh, you could just walk out of your apartment. There's probably like 10 bars where people are collected. You can wander into things in New York, and here in LA, everything's very intentional. You need to go places, like, on purpose.
Yeah, that's true. I definitely feel like I would, in New York, just like wander out of my apartment and get caught up in something, you know? And also, time just seems to go by really, really fast. Like, I look at the clock and it's 3 a.m. or something, where here, it's like, well, it's time to go to sleep now. It's 11 o'clock or whatever time. Like, there's just... time is different here. I feel like there's more space and time here for some reason. But
do you write better when you're under stress, or if you have a deadline, or if you're just completely relaxed and you have nothing to worry about?
I like writing more when I'm totally relaxed and have a whole day of nothing. Then I get a lot of ideas, like you said. But I also write really well when I have a lot of auditions, because, like, I use the two to, like, sort of put off the two. Like, so the problem with writing is sometimes, you know, you get an idea and you get inspired, and then, like, the finishing of it, like, figuring, like, you have to start making choices, you know?
Right.
And sometimes I'm, like, it's still bouncing around in my head. I want to take my time to figure out what those choices are. But there's something about if I also have, like, all these audition sides I'm supposed to learn, then, like, then I, like, play around on my guitar, like, or, you know, then I'm like, I mean, I'm not saying, like, I procrastinate, but there's something about having a lot to do that
sure.
makes you start to, like, well, you have to work on one of them, you know? Like,
yeah.
You can't. So, but I enjoy writing when I have, like, a whole, like, whenever that happens to happen. It hasn't happened in a while, but if I do have, like, 2 days off, like, two completely empty days, I love writing then.
I'm always so jealous of musicians just because... when you do stand up and you write a joke,
mm-hmm.
once people hear the joke, they're like, "Well, we don't need to hear that again. Now we already Aww. Know what the joke is." You know, but you could just sit down and write something, and then for years people will be like, "Do play that again."
Yeah.
And you can sort of coast on that, and I'm always like, "Oh, that'd be so amazing," you know? I mean, do you
yeah.
feel pressure to constantly have to write new stuff, or do you like to sort of just hone and perfect things and stick with them?
I feel the need to constantly make new stuff. So, because, like, I get, like, tired of, it's not that I get tired of songs, but.
Are you tired? Like, how do you
feel the need to, like, constantly make new.
How do you feel about your original stuff, like your old stuff?
Yeah, there's sometimes, people will come to shows and they'll be like, "Play Blue Toothbrush," which is that first, like, EP that mm-hmm. I did in Walking Dead. And I'm like, no, like, I refuse. Like, not that I'm not proud of it. I remember working on it and really, like, enjoying, you know, enjoying making it and feeling, like, proud of myself for, like, putting it all together and everything. But I'm like, I don't want to play Blue Toothbrush. I don't want to play Blue Toothbrush. I don't want to play. I'm like, nope, you're gonna have to, like, YouTube it or something.
Not right now.
I
get off your phone.
You could tell jokes over again because I feel like I guess you can't like go back to, like, if you're gonna go on, like, a tour, like a comedy club tour.
You can't really like when you know every time you go through a town, you kind of have to have.
New.
At least mostly, if not all, entirely new material.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people will just be like, "Oh, you're just going to tell the same fucking jokes again, right?" But, you know,
yeah.
but with the song, you know, a song is such a journey for people, and it anchors
yeah.
them in a time, and a joke is more like a magic trick where there's a turn and then people
right.
get it and then they don't
yeah.
need it. But occasionally someone will, you know, go, "Oh, I really like this joke. I want you to, you know, do this one joke because something
oh, wow.
about it was special."
Yeah.
But in general, people don't do that.
Yeah,
with
I guess
comedy.
Like live, you can't. I was just thinking about the fact that, like, how many times do we, like, YouTube the same like funny video or like the same funny? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, but that's different.
I think. You know, you really are people – because people, especially with music, they'll bring a lot to a song. You know, they bring their own baggage to a song.
Yeah.
Because it might mean something to you. It could mean something totally different to them. And who's to say who's right? I mean
– Yeah, totally.
You know what you intended, but you can't really tell someone they're not allowed to have the experience that they're having.
Yeah.
I mean, are you cool with that? Like, just like you put stuff out there and you sort of just let it go and it's going to be whatever it's going
to
be?
Yeah. And actually, I was just thinking the songs, too, for me start to – sometimes change meaning, like, or I start to see them in different ways, which is totally interesting. Like, I remember where I was writing them and who I was thinking about when I was writing them or the situation that I was thinking about. But it's funny how then when you perform them over and over and over again, they do start to take on their own little life mm-hmm. and you start to attach new things to them. And, like, words that I've written now, I'm like, oh, this is making me thinking of this new person that... isn't that interesting? Like, they start to take on their own. It's more like you're just, like, doing this thing, and you write this thing, and then it sort of starts to take on its own life.
Do you have songs that are so deeply personal that you sort of feel like, oh, I'll never really tell anyone what this is actually about. I'll just kind of let them.
Yeah. Yeah, I do kind of. I feel like I want to. I don't feel like it comes necessarily naturally to be like, this song is about this and I was doing this and it's about this exact person. I don't feel like that comes necessarily naturally, but you end up doing it in interviews and you end up telling people about it because you know that the fans will connect to it in a new way and in a special way, and they'll connect to you and your journey as a songwriter, and you know, maybe they'll be more interested in the whole project. So I feel like I end up telling the story about it, but it's not necessarily something that I always want to do. There's a song called Dad Says that I don't know why, but I hate singing it as much as, like, people love for me to sing it in shows, and they'll always be like, that was my favorite one, and I, like, sing it a cappella, and it's this whole moment. But it seriously feels like it takes a toll on me. Like, I don't love, because when I wrote it, I was really sad.
And so it's hard
to... it's hard to just, like, do that. Like,
you have to experience it every time.
I feel like I do. Even if I try to block it and just be like, well, I'm doing it for this reason.
Yeah.
I sang it every night of tour, and it still was like very, I don't know. I guess that's like the actor, that like you go back to that place and you like, you know, and I actually do usually tell a bit of a story with it when I perform it, but, I'll even ask my band, will be like, I'm not going to do Dad Says tonight, probably. And they'll be like, you should do it. And then I'm like, it's the first one I cut when I know I'm going to be like overtime at a set or this or that. Because I feel like it physically like takes a toll on me. I know it sounds weird, but like
it doesn't sound weird at all. Like, I mean, if you wrote it about something that was personal to you,
yeah.
You can either tell me what that is, or we can say to the audience, like, well, if you want to know, go see the show.
Go see the show.
Yeah.
But, or check it out. It's on Expired Love. It was on my last album. Now I'm talking about songs from my last album. But.
Right. But I think people, you know, I think sometimes when you're a live performer, sometimes people are like, oh, you're a puppet, and you should just get up there and dance around for, you know, because it's, you know, it's a very nice thing that an audience does, because it's very difficult, especially now with so many distractions with our devices and internet and what's available to us, and there's a glut of entertainment. It's a very nice thing for someone to get up, put on clothes, leave their house, park at a venue, go inside, be around a bunch of strangers, and say to you, Emily, all right, here I am, you know, take me on a journey.
Yeah, I mean, just to get up and go to a show, you're right, is such a like thing now, because you could have so much entertainment just stay at home.
Yeah,
it's scary to go out into the world.
Yeah,
and it's even for me. I love to go see live music. Like when I first moved to New York City, that was my favorite thing to do, and it's still like it is my favorite thing to do, and I still have a hard time making time for it.
I wonder if there's any it's kind of funny that it, you know, no matter how many times you might do that song, that it doesn't get any easier each time, that you still don't get more, you know, at least a little more armor from each time.
I do get armor, but I don't know, it just feels like it wears me out.
Yeah. And do you, you know, when you meet people after shows and they go, why didn't you play this? Are you like, for Christ's sake, I'm one person.
No.
I just need to, I only have so much energy. Or are you like, well
yeah, I usually am like, I do take it into account if someone says they missed a song and they are someone who comes to a lot of shows, because I do want like people to hear what they want. Like you said, if they came to see your show and they're fans. But some songs fill me up more. Like, they give me energy, though. Mm-hmm. That song, for some reason, just, like, wears me out. And there's actually songs from the new album. There's one called Crash and Burn. And then there's another song called Weapons. And Crash and Burn especially, I haven't played at any... Even though I've had release shows, I keep not playing this song. And I will play it, I think, during this next tour in November. But it's another one where it was very personal when I wrote it. And, like, I almost, like, haven't been talking about it. And now that the album is out, I've seen a few people. Actually, someone this morning tweeted at me, out of all the songs on your album, I love Crash and Burn the most. And how come you haven't been playing it? And I was like, obviously I didn't tweet them back. But certain ones, I love writing them, but maybe there's just something uncomfortable about. I guess that's why I should play them, right? Because people want to be moved and want to feel sad or uncomfortable, or they want to feel something, you know,
well,
when they come to a show.
Well, it's up to you as the performer to decide whatever you want to do. But I will say that as an audience member, to know that something that's meaningful to me is also deeply meaningful to you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real emotional arc in a show. You just have to decide if you can handle it, you know, like if you can snap,
if you can
come back from it afterwards and be like, okay, all right. And then, you know, do something with more energy.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that in terms of the narrative of each show, you know, those are the moments that people will really connect with, and they'll, you know, like that will make them keep coming back to see you every time. 'Cause they go, wow, what an incredible, and also it's so human to see someone expose themselves emotionally.
Right.
Because you want to connect with that, and it makes you feel things, and it's, you know, and so I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I also know that I think
Those are the ones you have to do. Those are the spots, the sore spots.
You know, when you look at your set holistic, when you look at the entire set, you know, there are going to be some that are happier and some that are sad. And I think that's where, you know, people are really going to take this whole trip with you. And then by the end go, wow. And they feel a lot of things and they'll keep talking about it, you know.
Yeah.
So I think those are good things to do, even though I know they're hard.
Yeah.
But again, you'll just have to decide when you're standing on stage, like, okay, I have the energy for this tonight or no, I don't. I mean, I think part of the trick to being a good performer is finding the energy, even though you feel like,
yeah,
I haven't slept in 3 days. We've been driving, you know.
Totally.
I've had Cracker Barrel 4 times in the past 2 days.
And Kind Bars. That was on, yeah, like Kind Bars for your dinner. Like that's kind of a.
You're definitely the Kind Bar dinner. I've done that so many times.
And yeah.
They're smushed at the bottom of my bag that I travel with. And I just got to like peel the plastic is fused to that sticky. Blueberry, whatever the.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like a fucking parrot. Like I feel like I'm eating bird food.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I pull out a Kind Bar, but I'm told they're good for you.
They're good for you, I think. So I always have them in my guitar. Yeah, I always have them. That's been dinner.
Can you eat before a show, or do you have?
I don't eat a lot. That's why I end up eating stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like, but also sometimes the options available, you know, in different towns and stuff like that. I mean,
sure.
Not being, you know.
Do you have anything crazy on your rider that your agent put? Because sometimes agents will put crazy things on a rider to see if the venues are paying attention.
Yeah.
Do you have any? What's on your rider?
I had one thing that I was actually genuinely interested in. Like I was like, oh, I'm going to put one like kind of fun special thing. I'm really into coffee and like local coffee. So I put like, you know, a bag of your like local coffee, whatever your best local coffee shop or like locally roasted coffee is and stuff. And then, but the thing is, these venues, they're like just showing up to work and then they're like getting the stuff really fast, whatever's on the rider. And they're like, okay, I'll get like the oranges and the apples. Like they, and so like nobody really did it. Like every, like, cause they're like, I'm not going all the way over to blah, blah, blah. They get like I just went to the grocery store and I'm grabbing a thing of like the Starbucks or the Dunkin' Donuts, like whatever, you know, like. So it didn't really work. Like, that was the only thing that I was like, I'm going to do something kind of, like, special and quirky.
You know what's going to happen now, Emily Kinney?
What?
Whatever city you go to, your fans are going to they're gonna bring bags of local coffee.
Yeah.
You're gonna be like, why did I say that? Your tow vehicle is going to be just packed full of locally sourced, locally grown coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely had, like, fans bring me coffee because they know that I'm, like, into it and into different kinds of coffee and stuff. But, that's the only thing that's that crazy. Mostly it's, like, pretzels and almonds, like, really boring stuff. I try to put healthy stuff.
Yeah.
If I put anything.
It's
what
good.
What do you put?
It's good. Oh,
do you put anything?
I have, you know, my assistant came up with a list of things that she noticed that I consume a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started seeing this shit pop up in dressing rooms, and I was a complete moron about it. I'm like, how did you know to get these protein bars? Wow, what a great guy. I just thought your rider. I mean, like, mine's very simple. It's just because I don't drink alcohol, so it was just basically, like, a little bit of sparkling water, like a couple protein bars, decaf coffee.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a Starbucks nearby, I'll have them get, like, a chai latte. If not, it's not a big deal. I can grab one on the way to the show. But, yeah, it's really boring. Like, my rider's really boring.
Yeah.
But I also, I don't want people having to run all over the place to, you know,
I guess
like, I feel
don't
bad,
either.
You know?
But I didn't really, like, the first time I made a rider was really for this last, like, tour where I was like, ooh, what's something, like, like, I remember my managers emailing me, is there something special you want? And I was like, oh, that'll be a fun thing. But now that I've been watching, yeah, it's like they don't want an extra thing to do.
But I will say this. There is something that's really nice about, because there's so much that you just can't control, and especially when you're on the road and you're away from home and you don't know what's going to happen. It's really nice to have as many certain things as possible.
Yeah.
So when you show up to somewhere, that's why, because I get shit all the time. People are like, why do you drink Starbucks? Why do you drink local coffee? And I go, hey, I'm not trying to fuck over the people who are local coffee artisans. It's just, I have a lot of uncertainty in my life, and knowing that a Starbucks is the same every time.
I do agree with
that. Seeing
it
in that room makes me feel like, oh, here's a little piece of home. Like, I just feel comfortable seeing that.
Yeah, I do agree that, like, I will go, it's not like I'm definitely not against Starbucks, and I like it for that reason. I know it's going to, like, if I get an Americano from Starbucks, like, I know what it's going to taste like. I know what, you know, like, it's exactly what you want. And you know your chai latte is going to taste a certain way.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
You know, and it's, I almost want to say, like, I'm only doing this for you guys, because if I feel more comfortable, the show is going to be better.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I feel good, and then you guys are happy, and then everything's great.
Yeah.
And everything leaves good.
Yeah.
Do you want to, what do you think? Do you want to, this is totally up to you.
Yeah.
Dealer's choice. Do you want to end the podcast with two songs, or do you want to start with one and end with one? Do you want a bookend?
Wow, I don't know. What do you think is better? Maybe a bookend.
Do you want a bookend?
Yeah, sure.
So which song would you want us to play first? Would you want us to
Never Leave L.A.
Never Leave L.A. Okay. So,
do you want, I know I just told you I didn't want to talk about them. Do you want me to talk about them?
You don't have to.
No, I will. I will. But I didn't know.
You know, this podcast is all about you and whatever you want. This is your domain. If you want to talk about it. Yeah. What is Never Leave LA about besides never leaving LA?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just about like falling in love. And I had a friend actually who said that he met a girl on a movie set when he was in filming some movie in like Texas, and a girl who was a local hire was also working on the movie, and they liked each other, and she was like, oh, I'll come visit you sometime in LA. So the movie ended, they got done filming, and she, you know, got a ticket to just come for like the weekend, 'cause they were going to see how it worked out. And she got there, and he just like lived in this, you know, little small studio or whatever. And she ended up staying. This is a friend of mine. She ended up staying and just like never left. And then now they're like married. And
oh, wow.
And stuff. Yeah. So that was like part of the inspiration.
Good
for the
weekend.
Song. Yeah. Like that was part of the, was the idea of like, and at the time when I wrote the song, I wasn't living in LA, but I had met someone that I really liked. And I was thinking, oh, like I was sort of thinking of my friend, and I was like, oh, I want to just like move it. Just like do it. Just like move in and just like fall in love.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. Like just to meet someone
nice
in LA and be like, let's just do this. Like, let's be in love and like be together. So that's what that song was like, hoping that would happen.
Are you able to manage? I mean, it's tough. It's tough to have not only just the life of an actor, but also the life of a touring musician too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, it's stressful and it takes a toll, and you miss people. Do you like the idea of being in love and having to travel, or are you sort of like, you know, maybe that's for when I'm settled? Like, how do you see the whole thing?
I would love if I met someone who could just like deal with the fact that sometimes I have to leave a lot, you know, like I would love it. I want to be with, I want to have a partner.
Yeah.
In, you know, so, but I also love my job. So I want a partner who like gets it.
Yeah. I think ultimately you just sort of, you know,
it
changes, and sometimes I think you want to be home more, and sometimes like,
yeah, I like both. Yeah. I like the idea of like being homey and like whatever, but
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. You don't. And also you're still young. It's not like you have to figure everything out this minute, but it is hard not to think about the big ticket items. Sometimes you're like, what do I really, you know, what do I want?
I definitely want to be in a really, like,
Can I just give you a piece of unsolicited advice?
Sure.
Don't ever take on big ticket items, big ticket emotional items, big life choices when you're exhausted. Like if you come to the end of the tour.
Yeah.
Or if you come to the end of work, or if it's like you've had a long day shooting or a long month shooting or whatever, mm-hmm. don't then go, what am I doing with my – because you're already going to be a little emotionally raw from the experience. and you're not necessarily going to make the best decisions, and everything's going to seem 10 times worse than it actually is.
Yeah.
So the only piece of advice that I would give you as a performer is when you feel those, ask yourself the question, wait, was I just in an emotionally compromised state because I'm exhausted? Oh, yes, I was. All right, I'm going to table this now. Maybe I won't feel that way.
Yeah.
Are you good? Are you good at separating logic from emotion in terms of when you have to make big decisions?
Oh, man. I don't know. That's a good... I feel like I don't know. I did start doing this thing where I write in the morning. Like, well, I haven't been doing it lately, but where I would just write... it's from that book, The Artist's Way or whatever, but just write... like stream of consciousness, like writing, like in the morning. And I actually started doing it when I found out Beth was going to die. And because I was feeling a little like all over the place and like very emotional and like, what now? Apartment in Atlanta? Where am I? Should I move to LA? What should I do with myself?
It's a major life choice it being was forced upon you.
Yeah. So it was a thing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this stream of consciousness writing thing. And I would notice that some things were just that day were annoying me. But then there were the things that would show up every day. And it's hard to write the same thing every day and not go, that has to change.
Right.
So, or this thing is making me happy every day. Or, you know, you could see. So I will say that like has helped me be like, is this actually a thing that's annoying me, or am I just like PMSing, or am I just like, or am I just like really sad because of this or that, or am I just like, you know, annoyed today because I'm really scared about like, oh, my album just came out and I'm really freaking out.
Wow, that's a really great idea for people, because I think, you know, we try to solve so many of our problems in our head.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult when you have to solve problems and like, well, now I have to get shit done today, through the day, and it's like trying to balance all that stuff. But that's a really great. I never really did any of the Artist's Way stuff. But that's a really good one.
But that's good for, like,
one.
Life, like, more than just your art.
You should really do that. Like, I feel like everyone should do that every morning, because how else will you really know until you bring something into the physical world? So you can look at it objectively and go, oh, you pretend it's another person. Oh, this person's probably dealing with this, and I'm that person. Maybe I should try to deal with some of this shit.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually – this sounds kind of – but I, at the time, was sort of dating someone, and it was not going well, and I – that was one thing that was the hard thing, where I was like, every day it was like a source of like sort of pain for me, you know, and it wasn't like the kind of thing that I could fix, like work. It wasn't like, oh, he does this thing, I just need to like talk about this one thing.
Right.
It was like, it made it easier for me to like make a change, you know?
So, yeah.
So I do think it, and it was was the right decision, but, or if there's something that you're doing, like, oh, I'm so annoyed that I feel this way or that way, that, you know, you can, like, change.
Does it weird you out at all? Like, if you date someone and then it makes the news and then people are talking about it and you're like, that's my personal life.
Oh, yeah, that makes me feel weird. But
that is weird, right?
It is weird, but I get it. I mean, it's weird. I don't know.
It's unfortunately.
It's something that's only been, like, recent, I guess, in the last few rounds of whatever.
I mean, like, I don't know if most people can really understand what that's like, but I would imagine it feels very invasive, like, oh, that's my personal life.
Yeah, well, you can start to feel like, okay, this thing where I'm talking about, you're writing how you feel and in your world, but you can start to think that the way other people feel actually matters to how you feel. Does that?
Sure.
And, like, it doesn't really.
No.
Not that everyone shouldn't have their, if you think I'm should be with someone or not or whatever, sure, tweet it, whatever, but like it shouldn't matter to me,
right?
Like, it should only matter to me how I feel in the relationship, or if I like that person, or if I want to be with that person. It shouldn't matter what you think,
right?
But you can start to think it does matter.
Yeah. And
it doesn't.
Part of the danger of, you know, having our faces an inch from social media at all times is that you start thinking in these terms of like, oh, everyone says this, or every time, and it's like, maybe it's 100 people, you know, like, but when you see it under a microscope, you go, wow, it's everybody.
Yeah.
No, it's not really.
It's not. No. Yeah. It's just like a few loud people on Twitter or something.
Yeah. I mean, anything.
In a magazine or whatever, you know.
The funniest bit of accidental advice I ever heard was Louis C.K. was talking about it's something about the internet and like the internet freaking out about stuff. And he goes, yeah, if you just go off the internet for a few days, it's kind of like it never happened. You know, it's like,
yeah,
if you don't get caught up in it, eventually people just get preoccupied with other things.
Oh, yeah.
Because we all have to be distracted at all times.
Yeah.
So it is good to remember, like, oh, this doesn't mean everything.
Right. No.
Do you kind of embrace those moments where things get weird or go sideways a little bit because you go, oh, I think I can write about this. You know, like I can get something interesting out of this. It's almost like, you know, a little bit of fodder for the machine.
Yeah, I do feel like when I don't feel heard, when I don't feel understood, writing a song is really helpful. Because then you know, I do feel like sometimes in relationships, and not just like romantic relationships, but all, or even that, like feeling like, oh, those like if someone is commenting a lot on your relationship and like if you're a public kind of person, whatever, not feeling like they're understanding where you're coming from or not mm-hmm. understanding what's really going on, a song is a good way to sort of be like, well, rather than to keep fighting someone, you know, you can write your, well, no, this is from my point of view, how I felt and what I feel like went on or what I hope for. And it's like you've had a chance to really make it something.
Yeah.
And make yourself heard. Where like sometimes when you're talking to someone who you're dating or having a fight with someone, no matter what, you're not going to be heard because they're also worried about being understood and heard.
Sure.
And you know, sometimes it's just never going to happen. You're never going to be able to have that conversation that's really satisfying. And I feel like for me, music is, and I've always told people this, like regardless of where it goes, as far as like, you know, selling albums or this or that, for me, writing a song is, that itself is very satisfying. Just sitting down, writing it, you know, playing it, making the thing, recording it for my own or doing a show or whatever, that itself is like really satisfying regardless of like if it's good or bad.
Right.
Or successful or not successful.
Because you're able to convey much more about what you're trying to say based on how you present the material.
Yeah, I feel heard. I feel understood in some moment where I wasn't understood.
So maybe you'll actually write a song about why you don't want to perform Dad Says.
No.
It's like the song that explains why you can't do the song.
The thing that keeps me performing that song is because people always mention it after. It's like, oh, that one made me think of like my dad, or that
sure.
song made me feel like this, or that, you know, like, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And then, so the other song you played with Michael is the other song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That song, so I wrote that song actually when I was doing a play in San Francisco, and I met a really cool guy. And it's actually on my album, there's two songs that go together. So that's the second part. The first part is a song called Berkeley's Breathing. So it was while I was spending time in like Berkeley, California, basically.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows like those two songs kind of show two different times of, but with the same person and like how I felt or how they made me feel at different times. And just, it's that feeling of, when you meet someone and you feel like they're like the same as you somehow. Like,
yeah.
They like see the world the same way as you. And I remember meeting this person and feeling that way, like immediately. Like, from the moment that we met, it was like, this person, like, is, like, sees things the same way I do somehow.
Are you a fan of the Muppet movie?
Yeah, I haven't seen that in so long, though, since I was little.
Listen, if you get a chance.
Okay.
Watch the Muppet movie.
Uh-huh.
There's first of all, it's amazing, and it totally holds up. But this guy named Paul Williams wrote all the music for it, and he's been on the podcast a couple times. But he wrote one of my favorite lines in any song. This one character, Gonzo, is having this existential crisis because he feels out of place. He feels alien, but he's down on the earth, and they're on this weird journey. And there's a line where he says, there's not a word yet for old friends who've just met. It's just like such a beautiful sentiment. But I feel like it's a lot of it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I think you would appreciate it. I think you would appreciate that. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So, you know, watch the original Muppet movie when you get a chance.
Will.
You know, do you watch anything?
I don't have cable right now, but I do watch. I watch stuff.
Yeah.
do you watch anything?
I watch stuff.
I watch television.
I watch television.
I don't watch that much TV as much as I love acting. I just don't. I don't know. I just, like, the time just goes by so quickly in my day, and I don't watch But I watch. I'm really into this show, The Affair. I just got into Mr. Robot. But I'm behind, so don't like. But I love it. I love it so much.
I haven't seen The Affair, but I know they just came back.
Yeah, the second
people
season.
Seem to like it.
Oh, it's so good. The music is really good too.
It is.
I think the opening sequence is Fiona Apple. Like the music is great, and it's just it's so good. It kind of like goes back and forth between two point of views of what's happening, and I always think that's interesting. Like how the same scenario can be looked at and remembered differently. Like different people remember things just a bit differently. You know?
That's cool. All right. I'll give it a shot. But there's so much television.
Much television.
I have a weird question for you.
Okay.
But this is, I don't know. This is sort of an ego question for me. I'm just curious. So, you know, you come on to Walking Dead season 2.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they announce, like, there's just going to be this weird show after Walking Dead to talk about what just happened on Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Do you think that's weird or do you, like, what? Or you do you even know that's happening or is that...
Yeah.
Is that... Because it's such a... It's a strange thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, we got made fun of a lot. Like, you're just talking about, you know... And now it's become a part of the universe in a weird sort of way. But at the time... You know, what did that feel like to you guys? Like, why is someone making a show about the fucking show that we're making?
No, I don't remember, like, exactly how I felt. I knew that it existed. I just remember thinking, like, oh my God, a lot of people watch this show. Like, for me, it was part of the whole snowball of, like, because the audience really, really grew between like season 1, season 2, and season 3.
Yeah.
Like grew really, really fast. And I noticed, and I feel like that was another sign of how big the show was getting, that people love it so much. And there's so many people watching it that like we need a show to like talk about it after. I mean, you know, like to me, it was like another thing of like, wow, this show is really affecting a lot of people. And, you know, I was also noticing from the time that I started to now, like just how much people like come up to you in the street or like between season 2 and season 3, like how many more people were starting to watch the show. And, you know, I think people really appreciate things like Talking Dead. And I do, like, I think it's fun to watch and see, and, you know, they get to see like their favorite characters, but then they get to see like the actor behind it and see that like, oh, they're this person playing it, and you know, they get to, I think it's fun. And also, well, like conventions are like that too. Like I always think it's cool to go, for me personally, to go to conventions, because when I'm working on the show, it's really sad and dark and it all feels very real to me. Like I know it's a show about zombies, but like we really live in it and we sort of like soak it all in. And then you go to a convention and people are like dressed as the characters and it's sort of like silly and fun and they're playing games that are like zombie themed, and I feel like it kind of brings this nice, like, fun element to it.
Yeah,
and well, I think the show needs that a bit.
It's fun. You know, it's good. And it's sort of like the, you know, with going through what you go through on stage when you're kind of feeling something, and I know it can be hard. But I also know that, you know, when you were on the show, you were great on, you were always great on Talking Dead. And also, but I know there were times, especially the last time you were on, where it was emotional.
Yeah.
But I also kind of feel like, you know, not at the expense of your pain, but just I think the fans really appreciate that you care as much as they do and that you're not just like, well, you know, where you can be very academic about it. And it's like, this was just another job. But like really seeing that it's important to you as it was to them, I think is one of the things that helps make it so special for them.
Yeah, it's sort of like that show that, I mean, your show is, it's sort of like this nice little release after, because it is such a serious, like, dark drama.
It's so intense.
And it's so nice to have, like, a moment of, like, oh, but it's like, we love this show and we love the characters and it's all fun. Like, it's fun. Like, it's cool.
Are you going to be in any conventions coming up?
I will be at, I'll probably be at the one in New York. There's, like, a New York Walker Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably go to that one. And then I think I'm doing, like, this zombie cruise, which sounded kind of like crazy and fun, but I know some of the other cast members are doing it too. So I was like, that could be really
rad. Fun. What if a zombie outbreak really happened on the cruise?
You
would never
know
because you'd think everyone was in costume. Please promote everything that you have that's coming up that you want people to know about.
Okay. Well, the biggest thing right now is This Is War. It's an album I've worked really, really hard on. I was working on it all while I was working on Walking Dead. Go get it. It's at all your independent music stores as well as like Barnes & Noble and any place you can. If you want physical copy, you can also download it on iTunes and Amazon and stream it for free on Spotify or however you listen to your music. And then I've got a bunch of shows in November on my website if you want to see me live.
Is it just EmilyKinney.com?
EmilyKinneyMusic.com.
EmilyKinneyMusic.com.
Yeah, and also follow me on Instagram and Twitter, and I keep everyone up to date. And the Knicks starts soon, and I'll appear in the second season of that, too.
Fantastic.
So.
If you think about it, you could, you know, like Snapchat and Periscope are kind of good ways to give people a sense of what your shows are like. Like, you could stream something.
Oh, that's a really good idea. Maybe, yeah. Our next show will do something like that.
Yeah, if you do something Periscope-y, it's like it's live and it's in the moment. People get to, you know, I mean, obviously I wouldn't Periscope the whole show, but just a snippet just so people can kind of get a sense of what it's like, because it is, you know, there is a little bit of an education process when people see you as one idea, and to show them, like, no, it's all this other stuff too. So I
You're
think
so it, right. Yeah,
I think, like, it's good just to show them, like, just show them.
Yeah, totally.
All right,
that's
good.
Great.
Well, we're going to play you're going to play Michael now, and that's going to end the podcast. We'll go out from there. But I thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And welcome to Los Angeles.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm excited to have a new little chapter here in
LA.
It's going to be really fun.
Interesting to see how it affects your music, too.
Me too.
Because it is so sunny here all the time.
Yeah.
Although we're about to hit a shitty rainy season.
Okay.
We're going to hit an uncharacteristic. You're going to move to Los Angeles and it's going to
be raining all the time.
I came here. But it'll be fun to see how that grows. I mean, it's all part of this fun journey. But congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And now here's Emily Kidding playing Michael here on the Nerdist Podcast.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.